It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is sunny and 53 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 57% humidity, northeast winds to 8 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies today with isolated showers this afternoon. Calm winds will turn to the southeast at 5. Isolated showers tonight too, and for tomorrow, rain, mainly after 10 a.m. A light east wind. Rain for the rest of the week, except Saturday, partly sunny, Sunday, mostly sunny. Coming up on the Midday Report, a boat recently sank in St. Herman Harbor. It highlights problems with that harbor. And the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly has passed its annual budget with a lower mill rate for taxpayers. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Trump loyalists were outside the Miami courthouse today where former President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to 37 counts, federal charges that he unlawfully retained defense and other classified documents after leaving office and failed to turn all of them over to the Justice Department. NPR Scott Detrow says Trump, who is seeking a return to the White House, remains defiant.
Every single investigation into him, whether it was the Mueller investigation or the first time he was impeached or the second time he was impeached or the time that he was charged in New York State in a different criminal matter or the ongoing special counsel investigation into January 6 or many other things, he says, this is a witch hunt. I'm being politically persecuted.
NPR's Scott Detrow reporting. Large numbers of Trump supporters turned out outside the courthouse.
Wake up, America! Wake up, America!
Miami police say they ramped up security ahead of demonstrations. The Biden administration has announced another $325 million in security assistance for Ukraine. It comes as NATO Secretary General visits Washington, D.C., and NPR's Michelle Kellerman has the latest.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the aid that allies are giving to Ukraine is making a difference on the battlefield, helping Ukraine with its counteroffensive against Russia's occupying forces.
They are making advances. They are gaining ground. This is still early days, but what we all know is that the more land the Ukrainians are able to liberate, the stronger their hand will be at the negotiating table.
If or when there are negotiations. Stoltenberg was speaking alongside Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who says NATO will announce more support for Ukraine at a summit in July. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
The Fed's holding another meeting where it's widely expected to hit the pause button on its aggressive rate hike campaign in light of data like the report out today showing inflation eased again. NPR's Alina Stolyuk with the numbers.
Prices in May were 4% higher than a year earlier, and that's an improvement from April when the annual inflation measure was 4.9%. On a monthly basis, May prices climbed 0.1% from April. Inflation has moderated significantly since a year ago when it hit a 40-year record last summer. The cost of gas and food had skyrocketed and now has come down, but the cost of living still continues to climb, even after the series of 10 interest rate increases by the Federal Reserve. The central bank now begins yet another policy meeting where it's widely expected to leave interest rates unchanged for now. Alina Selyuk, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up 145 points, ending the day at 34,212. The S&P was up 30 points, and the Nasdaq was up 111. You're listening to NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Coast Guard is still investigating what caused a boat to sink in St. Herman Harbor earlier this month. The 48-foot fishing vessel La Mer sank in its slip nearly 2 weeks ago. It's since been floated and pulled from the water. Kodiak Harbor Master Dave Johnson told city council members at Thursday's regular meeting that the vessel destroyed two adjacent finger floats when it went down, meaning two slips are now also out of commission. The sinking is the latest bad news for the aging harbor. Johnson's comments were part of a brief update about ongoing infrastructure issues at St. Herman Harbor, which is also known as Dog Bay. The harbor had already been losing about one finger float a year due to wear and tear. A windstorm back in March caused even more damage and ripped out seven finger floats. St. Herman Harbor is at the end of its service life and has been plagued with other issues too, including corroded pilings and rusted out electrical equipment. The city has outlined a total replacement of St. Herman Harbor as its top priority for the upcoming fiscal year, with an estimated price tag of $56 million. Kodiak City staff submitted a federal grant application to pay for the project back in April. Johnson said via email on Monday that the city anticipates it will hear back sometime in late fall and plans to move forward with permitting and other initial phases of the project to be shovel-ready as soon as the grant is awarded. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly passed its annual budget at a special meeting last week. As part of passing the budget, the Assembly also voted to lower the borough's mill rate or calculation of property taxes. Service areas such as the Women's Bay Road service area or residents within Kodiak City limits may be subject to other mill rates. Next year, residents around the archipelago will see their property tax drop by about 50 cents for every $1,000 their houses and land are valued. The lower mill rate comes after the borough issued higher assessed property values around the archipelago this year. Other highlights from the budget include an increase for education by about $250,000. Only four members of the assembly were present at the meeting, along with the mayor and borough staff. The vote was unanimous. The number of Kuskokwim River tribes challenging the federal permits for the Donlin Gold Mine project in court has doubled from 3 to 6. They say the process was flawed and tribal consultation was inadequate. They want the court to order the feds to take a closer look. Donlin says it welcomes more dialogue with the communities. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello has the story.
On Wednesday, June 7th, the Chivac Native Village joined other Yukon-Kuskokwim tribes in their federal lawsuit challenging the proposed Donlin gold mine. Richard Slatz is the second chief and council member of Chivac Native Council.
You know, it's just something that we've been involved with all along, is the opposition of one of the world's greatest, biggest, most open pit mines that's proposed upstream or upriver from the Kuskokwim River.
The Chivac Native Village, along with other tribes, is requesting more scrutiny of the Donlin project to ensure protection of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta ecosystem and the natural resources they depend on for their existence and traditional ways of life. Slatz does not think there was sufficient tribal consultation.
And what the majority of this is mostly been through the environmental impact statement that was approved, and then mostly that without adequate consultation to the tribes after the final, and that it's moving forward.
There are 56 tribal communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, including 13 downriver that could be directly affected if something went wrong at the massive project. Tribal leaders say what happens at the Donlin mine has the potential to affect the entire Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, including coastal communities like Chivac and the fish and wildlife resources people in the region depend on for their existence. Slatz notes that dwindling salmon stocks within the region highlights the need to protect the entire ecosystem, including salmon and smelt habitat. Slatz says the lawsuit targets flaws in environmental and subsistence studies. It alleges that permits for the mine are deficient in many areas. Slatz says when the final Environmental Impact Statement, or FEIS, for Donlin came out in 2012, only selected villages were afforded the opportunity to consult.
And all of the villages were consulted. The final EIS came out in 2018. with 10,668 pages, with 30 days of comment period. When the record of decision came out in 2018,
Donlan disagrees. In their press release response, Donlan states that they've held hundreds of public meetings to encourage open engagement and create opportunities for residents of the region to share their concerns and questions. The statement says, quote, "We have a long-standing history of investing in the region's communities to share our values of safety, environmental stewardship, community wellness, cultural preservation, and education," end quote. Dan Graham, the general manager of Donlan Gold, said in the press release, quote, "While we are disappointed, we continue to extend invitations to have open dialogue about concerns, questions, and information, and we don't see that changing. Our goal is to be a good neighbor and follow through on our community investments and continue to review and update the safeguards to the environment where appropriate as we work toward advancing the project in a safe and responsible manner," end quote. The court challenge, if successful, would invalidate key permitting documents and authorizations for the mine and would require federal agencies to identify and require measures to prevent predicted harm to Rainbow Smelt from Donlan's barges. If built, the proposed mine would include a vast and deep open pit, a 316-mile buried natural gas pipeline, a processing plant, waste rock and tailing storage facilities, water treatment and power plants, dams and reservoirs, and transportation infrastructure including airstrips, access roads, a port expansion in Bethel, and a barge corridor along the Kuskokwim River. It's not just the barges that need more examination. Slatt says that the environmental impact statement fails to mention what would happen if the tailings dam breaches.
And then it has devastating effects to life around them. Those irreversible effects.
There are now six tribes suing in federal court to halt Donlan, represented by Earth Justice. The three original plaintiffs were ONC, Tuluksak Native Community, and the Organized Village of Kwikluk. Three tribes joined as plaintiffs in the amended complaint filed this week: Native Village of Eek, Native Village of Kwikliuk, and Chivek Native Village. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
The Port of Seattle shut down its cargo operations Saturday due to labor conflicts, and the Port of Alaska says it could affect the state. About 90% of Alaska's goods arrive by ship or barge. Most of that comes through Seattle. Jim Jaeger is spokesperson for the Port of Alaska in Anchorage.
Any impact on shipping out of Seattle-Tacoma area is going to have an impact on Alaska just because we're getting all of our goods there, or the vast majority.
Jaeger says half the goods barged to Alaska stay in Anchorage, and the other half is distributed throughout the state. The details of the shutdown are unclear. The Pacific Maritime Association, which represents terminal operators, blames the labor union, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, for the shutdown. The labor union denies its worker strike is causing the port's closure. Jaeger says the extent of the impact on Alaska won't be known for a while, but he expects it will likely be more of an inconvenience, like minor delays of goods getting onto shelves. He says the bulk of the slowdown is in international cargo, so it probably won't be a huge hit to Alaska.
I don't think it'll get terrible, but, you know, it all depends on your line of work. If you're worried about getting food for the grocery store, yeah, we'll get most of your stuff. On the other hand, if you're in a business that relies on something that's coming from Asia, you may have a real problem coming up.
Jaeger stresses that it's important for Alaskans not to panic shop, like during the pandemic, scooping up products like toilet paper. That could make things worse.
It took 6 months to sort of get out of that whipsaw action of the supply chain. Could that happen? You bet it could. And will it happen? Oh, but with some goods it does.
As for the strike itself, Jaeger says there are different unions in Alaska, and it won't affect port workers here. A Fairbanks woman ran 68 miles to celebrate her 68th birthday. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
Jane Lanford spent 3 days on the Taylor Highway last week covering the distance.
Roughly 23 miles a day.
Lanford camped along the way with her husband, who drove while she ran, providing food and water. She says there weren't any mosquitoes because it was so hot.
It was in the upper 70s, and that's just pretty hot to be out there. There's not much shade. Either the trees are too short or the sun's directly overhead.
It was also hilly, including American Summit, a challenge Lanford says was made up for by the view from the top.
You can look down on how far you came up, and it's really amazing.
From American Summit, it was over 16 miles downhill to Eagle and the Yukon River.
I said, I have to touch the Yukon River when I finish. And it was perfect because when I hit the boat launch, I was at 68.1 miles.
It's the third year in a row that Lanford has done long runs on Alaska roads to celebrate her birthday. Her first run, 135 miles on the Denali Highway, and this year's 68-miler on the Taylor were fundraisers for the international aid nonprofit Shelterbox USA. Lanford has also run marathons all over Alaska, as well as in every other U.S. state, most in 4 hours or less. She attributes her running longevity to naturally good body mechanics.
Been running for 43 years now with not much time off for injury whatsoever.
Lanford says she has some arthritis in her knees and she's walking more hills than she used to, but that hasn't diminished her running aspirations, which include completing a marathon or half marathon in every Canadian province. One of the few remaining is Manitoba, where she's signed up to run a full marathon next week. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A wildfire near Healy has drawn a big response. The Ridgetop Fire was reported before noon on Monday off the Parks Highway about 5 miles north-northwest of Healy, Alaska. Division of Forestry and Fire Protection Information Officer Brandon Hampton says the fire was human-caused. Hampton says details are still under investigation, but the ignition point was near buildings.
We did have to evacuate some of the structures towards the heel or the starting point of the fire.
Hampton says the fire was topography, fuel, and wind driven.
There was a pretty substantial south wind blowing up the Parks Highway.
The Ridgetop Fire is the only wildfire being fought in Alaska, enabling a full assault from the ground and air.
That includes hot shots, Type 2 hand crews, smoke jumpers, fire engines, dozers, and other heavy equipment. We had an abundance of aviation resources throughout the state that we could call upon that really allowed us to aggressively attack this fire with both water-dropping helicopters, water-dropping aircraft, and retardant aircraft as well.
Hampton says the response was effective.
We did protect all the structures and all the cabins in that vicinity. However, we did lose one small outbuilding.
As of Monday night, the fire was estimated to be about 300 acres. Hampton says additional crews and equipment were mobilized to the fire overnight, and they will be putting in line and mopping up hot spots today. He cautions anyone driving in the area of the Parks Highway to be on the lookout for ongoing suppression operations. Overdose deaths have been consistently rising in Alaska for the past several years. Most of that is due to illegal fentanyl. And it's been showing up more and more in pills that look like prescription drugs but are in fact counterfeit. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more on why these pills are so dangerous.
The counterfeit pills look just like the prescription opioid pills they're mimicking, or sometimes they're designed to look like an anti-anxiety pill like Xanax. But they're actually made with fentanyl, a synthetic or lab-created opioid. Captain Tony Wegson is the commander of the Alaska Bureau of Investigation. He says state law enforcement responded to Alaska's jump in overdose deaths last year with a big effort to find and seize illegal fentanyl.
The dosage units of fentanyl that we seized was in the millions of potentially fatal doses, so enough to kill Alaska twice over.
It's too early to say, but he's hoping that because of that work, Alaska will see a decline in overdose deaths for 2023. He says fentanyl has been a boon to drug dealers because it's potent and relatively easy to make, and his understanding is that most of the fentanyl and counterfeit press pills are being made in Mexico by cartels. Wegzin says part of the danger is that the labs making fentanyl and pressing pills are not pharmaceutical grade.
Those are, you know, farms in rural parts of Mexico where in kitchens and bathrooms and houses, there's no beakers involved. It's buckets and pieces of wood to stir them.
So he says the distribution of the fentanyl within batches of pills is not consistent.
And so some batches may be very potent and some batches may not have anything in it. It might just be binder. And you just don't know.
According to the Drug Enforcement Administration, or DEA, 6 in 10 of these fake pills nationally have a potentially fatal dose of fentanyl. Wegzin says rates in Alaska are likely similar. But the demographics of overdoses tend not to be young people. Less than 6% of opioid overdose deaths are of people under 24. And last year, there were almost no deaths of kids younger than 14. Coleman Cutchins is a lead pharmacist for the State Health Department. He says the risk profile of counterfeit pills is alarming. He says it's not safe to take a pill that wasn't prescribed for you.
Honestly, you know, we're at the point where the risk of somebody handing you a tablet that looks like a medication that you don't know where it came from is very similar risk to somebody handing you a syringe with a needle on it and saying inject this.
This is partly because fentanyl is such a powerful drug. A lethal dose of it can fit on the tip of a pencil.
Even in the medical world, you know, fentanyl is dosed in micrograms, and micrograms is an extremely small unit of measure. So when you talk about the difference, you know, a double dose between 1 and 2 micrograms is just an extremely small quantity of measure.
Cutchins says that counterfeit pills have been found at pharmacies in Mexico, but that it's highly unlikely fake pills would show up in a pharmacy in the U.S. or Canada, where there's much stricter oversight on drug manufacturing. But Americans sometimes do go to Mexico or order prescriptions from there online because the prices are lower. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns Americans not to do that. Cutchins says fentanyl is a huge issue now, but he's also concerned because this current wave of the opioid epidemic seems to be full of synthetic opioids, which are lab-produced, and he's worried it will get worse.
You know, we're kind of on the front end of this wave, and we're a little bit in the dark as to like what's going to happen next in terms of the evolution of synthetics. And they're becoming so much more powerful and so much more, you know, potential to cause injury and to cause death that it's just very different than it's been in the past.
Right now, Alaska and the rest of the U.S. relies heavily on Narcan or Naloxone to reverse opioid overdoses. So Cutchins says the biggest fear is that a lab will create a type of fentanyl that's too powerful for Narcan. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Inflation is at its lowest in more than 2 years. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. Lower food and energy prices helped shrink inflation in May to a 4% annual rate. That's the smallest advance in the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index since March of 2021. Inflation is now at about half where it was at its peak last year at this time. That decline could help convince Federal Reserve policymakers to pause interest rate hikes. They begin 2 days of meetings today and decide on rates tomorrow. In previous public comments, Fed officials appeared split on whether it's time for a pause. Toyota today offered a detailed plan for electrifying its fleet. The world's biggest automaker hopes to launch longer-lasting and faster-charging batteries by 2026. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 13th day of June, the year 2023. 52 degrees in Kodiak under partly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds at 10 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 61% humidity. They are calling for isolated showers this afternoon, but mostly sunny skies too. Calm winds turning to the southeast. Isolated showers tonight, too, and then rain is expected tomorrow, mainly after 11 a.m., high near 50 tomorrow with light easterly winds, increasing to 10 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. We have an outgoing tide. The tide has just recently turned. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 4:51 this afternoon and be 2 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will be at 5:42 p.m. and be 2.9 feet in Larsen Bay.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued 10 a.m. on June 12th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 13th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th in the following areas in the central and north Cape sections of the northwest Kodiak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th in the following areas in the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Anton Larsen Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the northwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, the eastside Kodiak District, and the Big River and Outer Kukak Bay sections of the mainland district. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th, in the following areas: at Kathlea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Sultry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Friday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay, to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, in Waterfall Bay, to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, into the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821, and in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing, and this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
KMXT is supported in part by First National Bank Alaska, celebrating its 60th anniversary serving Kodiak by giving away weekly prizes through July 14th. A grand prize of 60,000 Alaska Airlines miles will be awarded on Friday, July 14, at the Customer Appreciation Anniversary event at the Kodiak branch from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The event is open to all. More information is available at fnbalaska.com/Kodiak60. Member FDIC.
Well, unfortunately, the library's songwriting workshop has been postponed until July 15th due to illness. But please continue to sign up for this fun workshop and be ready to write and tell your story on July 15th. The City of Kodiak's Public Works Department is patching Mill Bay Road today and tomorrow. They started at the Y today, and they're going to work their way all the way north until Mill Bay hits Rezanov. And tomorrow they're going to start on the north end and work their way back to the Y. One lane will be closed, an entire lane will be closed for the work. So please use caution when driving on Mill Bay Road and consider alternate routes if you don't have to drive on it. Kodiak City Council will be holding a special meeting on Wednesday. It will be held in the Kodiak Public Library at 1 p.m. The meeting is open to the public and will be web streamed as well. The web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And if you have any questions, contact the city clerk at 486-8636. And tomorrow, the continuing Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center special activity is noon till 1 p.m. invasive species presentation. And from 1 to 2 p.m., bring the kids for games and crafts. That's tomorrow at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.